Hi, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again. I'm chatting with you on June 11th and have the pleasure today of talking with Patricia Dobkin, who is Associate Professor and a Clinical Psychologist in the Department of Medicine at McGill University. And we're going to be discussing a paper that she has coming out in the August issue of Medical Education entitled Teaching Mindfulness in Medical School, Where Are We Now and Where Are We Going? Welcome, Patricia, to the podcast.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
It's my pleasure. I'm from Montreal originally, and so it's nice to have a chance to talk with somebody who's back home, and I hope that you're enjoying the summer there.
Well, we're waiting for it to come, but we're sure it will.
Yeah.
It's raining as if we're in Vancouver right now.
Oh, perfect. We've had a great week, so sorry for your luck, but I'm sure it will change. My understanding of your background is that you have been working in mind, body, and medicine at McGill and came from a history of doing research on wellness in chronically ill patients. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about your background and what led you to the work that you conducted for this paper?
Well, my background for the past 25 years is chronic illness in general and chronic pain in particular. And about 20 years ago, I learned of the program that was taught at University of Massachusetts Medical School called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction. And it was originally designed as a group intervention for patients with chronic pain. So I wanted to go there and get training so that I could offer it not only to chronic pain patients, but also to those with various chronic illness that medicine can't cure, be it diabetes or HIV positive people or any illness that people are basically suffering with. So there's quite a bit of training involved to teach MBSR. And so I went through all three levels of training. And McGill programs in whole person care was born about 10 years ago. And when this entity came into being, they invited me to come and work with them. This is part of McGill in the Department of Medicine. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Belford Mount, who was the founder of palliative medicine, both in Montreal and elsewhere, was the lead person of this program. And I said to them that I wanted to come, but only if I could build the mindfulness programs and have a place, a home for them. And so we literally, all three of us, Dr. Hutchinson, who's now the director of McGill programs in whole person care, Dr. Mount and I went down to Omega, where the training for teaching mindfulness courses was given. The two of them immediately saw the value. So when I came back, I was on sabbatical, and so was Tom Hutchinson, the director now. And we talked about wellness and patients and what I could offer to patients. But then I wrote a proposal called Well Doctors, Well Patients. And I said to Tom, if doctors aren't well, then they can't really offer what they want to in terms of wellness for patients. So can we design a parallel program for physicians? And my thinking was also that if the physicians understood what mindfulness was and what the mindfulness-based stress reduction program was, then they would send us their patients and they would discern which patients would this be appropriate for. So I wanted basically to have programs on both ends, programs for the patients and programs for physicians, so that all could benefit really.
Right. And for those who aren't familiar with mindfulness, can you tell us in a nutshell what the philosophy is or what your main goal is in trying to coach people in this direction?
Well, if we're going to stick to the side of the physicians and healthcare providers, mindful medical practice, which has also been written extensively about by Ron Epstein from the University of Rochester. He had his seminal paper in JAMA in 1999 called Mindful Practice. And mindfulness is being present in such a way that you are able to discern where you are in terms of your mind, your body, and your heart, and you are able to relate to others in such a way that you can help them see where they are. Let's say a person comes in with chronic illness, arthritis, and the doctor is able to relate to this person in such a way that they can encourage the patient to explore the possibilities of living better with the illness. So it's being present in the moment such that the interaction between the doctor and patient is such that wellness or healing can be promoted. But we still maintain that if the physician or nurse or other healthcare professional is burnt out or exhausted or unable to relate in this manner, then the possibility of healing is less likely to occur.
And this is a topic, as you suggested, that I know to have been brought into medical education by Ron and colleagues, and it does seem like it's gained steam, and a number of people have been writing about it and presenting at various conferences. And the paper that you have upcoming in medical education, what was your main goal in conducting that synthesis?
Well, the idea was to demonstrate that what we're doing at McGill is not unique, and that, in fact, there is a momentum in medical school. So that, for example, when we went to our dean of medicine recently and we said we want to teach this to all of our medical students, well, this kind of paper supports that idea, and that we're not alone doing it. And in some universities, it is already being integrated in the curriculum, such as Rochester and Monash Medical School in Australia. And in fact, we've just been given approval at McGill in 2015 in the winter semester. We'll be teaching the entire third year class in medicine. So that's 180 students. So this paper gives people who want to teach in medical schools a document that they can use to demonstrate that this is gaining momentum.
And despite that momentum, I imagine that most deans' first reaction when they're approached with new ideas or new content or practices that should be built into the curriculum, the response is, yeah, but there are lots of things that should be built into
Absolutely.
The curriculum. And so what was the compelling argument that you presented that made this a priority?
Two things. First of all, we have data. So we've been teaching this in medicine for 7 years. And throughout the entire 7 years, I've always collected data. And so we could show that the pre-post changes were positive. And we could also show that the kind of changes we saw in our physicians and in our students, and I gave a course also to residents, is similar to what's being found at Monash, similar to what's being found in randomized clinical trials. And so in medicine, data talks. So we had data, but also we've had some of the people who make decisions in our courses. And this is always very important because then it's not theoretical and they realize what we're doing by doing it themselves.
Right. Okay. And the results section of this particular paper seems to have supported your local experience. Did you learn anything unexpected from conducting this review?
Yes. That the formats are different. So the mindfulness-based stress reduction course, or what we've adapted and called mindfulness-based medical practice, is an 8-week program. But when I went to Rochester for more training, I realized that we have to have a whole toolbox of ways to teach mindfulness. So now we give a 2-day retreat in December in the weekend. And then sometimes we give a full day workshop. Sometimes we give classes that are just 2 hours. And so what we're seeing is there's not one way to teach this, and that we have to adapt to the situations, and everyone does if they want to teach this. And so in the review, I was able to document 14 medical schools that are teaching mindfulness in different ways. And I was quite surprised as to how differently it was done. And I thought that was interesting, because there isn't one way. And if one is rigid about it, it's not going to go forward. But then you have to balance that with being true to the teaching and to the course, such that you're actually offering something of value.
Well, and that variability, I think, is an important and constant statement for most of the things that we teach in health professions. And it makes it very difficult to do research and try to specify this is effective. So I'm wondering, across the variable strategies that you came across, are you seeing any hints of some strategies being more effective than others, or is it just too early to tell?
You mean strategies in teaching it?
Yeah.
Well, the most well-documented is the 8-week course. And so there have been randomized clinical trials that demonstrate that there are benefits to teaching the 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course to medical students, to nursing students, to physicians. Mick Krasner at University of Rochester has a paper in JAMA, and then there's a follow-up paper by Beckman that looks at more the qualitative aspects of the 70 physicians that went through their program. So that's the one that's documented with the best research as being effective. But when we do a 2-day intensive on the weekend, people report that this has given them enough of a introduction that they can on their own use meditation some. And then sometimes those people come to our 8-week course. There's been one study that was a randomized clinical trial with med students that just gave them a CD to take it home and to learn to meditate. And there were significant differences from that very brief intervention. So I think we don't know all the ways that this can be done, and so more research obviously needs to be conducted.
Right. Can I get you to elaborate a little bit on the differences that have been observed?
Well, the outcome that we studied that was different than other studies is we looked at self-compassion, and that changed significantly. And we saw that when a person became more mindful, when we assessed mindfulness, when there were changes in mindfulness, the healthcare professionals were more self-compassionate. And we think that's important for preventing burnout. And also we studied burnout itself, and we saw that there were reductions in emotional exhaustion, especially in the residents. And in the residents, we also saw reductions in depression. And so these kind of outcomes are quite consistent, but not everyone's using the same measures. Like self-compassion and psychological well-being hasn't been studied across the different laboratories. And we think that that's important to study because it touches on positive psychology. So rather than only looking at what's not going well, be it burnout or depression, we think that this course enhances well-being. And so can we demonstrate that? So that is a means of preventing or treating burnout.
Right. Okay. And you alluded in response to both of the last two questions to work that you think still needs to be done. And as much as this is a growing area, it clearly is in its infancy. So my last question would be based on the literature review that you just conducted and the synthesis that resulted, where do you think the priorities lie in terms of the next steps for people working in this area?
Well, I think we have to determine how long courses need to be in terms of not only class length, but we do an 8-week program, we do a 2-day weekend. I don't think we really know how this can be done best. With our med students, we do it in the space of a month and it's twice a week. So these different formats need to be compared. And we don't know the key elements. I mean, it's a package. We teach them many skills. And all together, it seems to have a positive impact. And that's true in other studies we see. But we don't know, is the practice of meditation on a daily basis the important part? Or, you know, in psychology, we call that the component analysis. If we took it apart and we use certain aspects and not others, what's really effective? It's taught in a group. Maybe it's the group dynamic that's important. So we don't really know the elements that are key for it being beneficial.
Right. Well, it sounds like there's lots of work yet to be done then. So the decade that you've spent bringing some of these ideas into the student community from your chronically ill patients sounds like will lead to another decade of fruitful work. So I'll end by congratulating you on the effort and saying that I look forward to seeing how things continue to evolve.
Well, it's becoming so much in demand that we need to train more people here at McGill to be able to teach it. Because when we start to do the entire medical school class, we need more capacity. And at University of Rochester Medical School, that's what they do really well. They train the trainers. And so my next step will be to get the training to train the trainers so that we have more capacity. Because the students are very attracted to this. And I think the younger medical physicians want more balance in their lives. They don't want to burn out. There's many women physicians who are living with multiple roles with children at home and so on. So people are really seeking a way to be well such that they can work well and also live well. So that's what we hope to help them do.
Very laudable goals. And I know from speaking with Ron and others at Rochester that they've found this paper quite helpful in furthering their own teaching and thinking about mindfulness in medical school. And so obviously there's mutual respect there, and hopefully others will find similar value in your paper. To that end, I'll just remind the listeners that we've been speaking about an article that you have coming up in the August issue of Medical Education 2013, the title being Teaching Mindfulness in Medical School, Where Are We Now and Where Are We Going? And I've been speaking with the lead author, Patricia Dobkin, and greatly appreciative of your time, Patricia. I'll hopefully talk with you soon.
Thank you so much.